Welcome to Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. It's always good to have you guys with me. Now, we deal with a lot of big issues on this show, and sometimes we deal with kind of those human stories. And most of the listeners to this show have a good sense that the purpose of the state is to protect the rights of the individual. According to our Declaration of Independence and according to our Constitution, that is its primary, indeed only, justification for existence. And often we look around our country and we see where bad legislation and ignorance and just a state that's too big, impinge on the basic rights of Americans. But sometimes, every now and then, you hear a story that makes you think this is all even worse than that. That it's almost as if the state is going to battle against its citizens. It's almost as if sometimes there's a malice driving the relationship between the state and the citizens whose rights it only exists to protect. Now, I don't know if you can put that down to the state as some kind of system or idea, or if it's because of jumped up state officials who think that because they work for the state and participate in the monopoly of power, they get to abuse the rest of us. But the reason I have on today the guest that I have is that he has a very personal story. He and his family have a very personal story that I want to share with you because I think it speaks to some of these bigger points I've just made. His name is Roland Gregg, and his family right now are beginning a fight in the courts against what I think is the malice of the big state. But that's what I think. Let me hand this show immediately over to Roland and invite him to tell us his story. And you guys, my listeners, can make up your own minds. Roland, thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you, Robin. I appreciate you taking the time today to allow me to share with you this story. Thanks a lot.
Well, I think this is an important story, as I say, because, you know, sometimes people like me, I'm a political writer, and people I talk to, we do a lot of this stuff in the abstract, right? We talk about our rights in the abstract. We talk about the loss of rights in very general terms, and we're right to do so. But what really matters, of course, at the end of the day, the only reason that rights matter is because people matter. And so sometimes in the abuse of rights, inevitably, it's people that get abused. And we need to see this. We need to see the concrete examples of as I say, how government oversteps its bounds, to put it mildly. I'm grateful to you, especially at this, I imagine, quite horrendous time for you and your family going to court, right?
Yes.
Right now.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So so my listeners know, where are you?
I'm in Seattle, Washington. I'm actually currently at my office and my lab in Seattle, Washington.
Okay, now let's. I just wanted to say, hand this over to you and tell the story. Tell them why I've got you on the show.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No problem. So basically, it started out, the beginning of this particular story started out probably about 4 or 5 years ago, when we were looking into medical marijuana as a medicine for myself, my wife, and after we were able to, go to the doctor and get a medical marijuana recommendation.
We is you and your wife at this point?
Yeah, me and my wife at this point. Probably four or five years ago.
Okay.
And we were able to use medical marijuana in some different formats that helped us. I broke my neck and my back when I was 17. I used to be a professional snowboarder, and I have pain consistently in my back, and I don't really like pain pills because they kind of have some bad side effects that I don't really agree with my body. And so I just eventually just kind of live with it. But sometimes when I take the cannabis oil, just ingest it or vaporize it, it helped a lot with my pain and it helped me function. My wife, she had some anxiety things. And again, traditional pain or traditional anxiety pills didn't really work well, but sometimes actually juicing the cannabis and other ways of intaking tinctures helped her a lot. And so, so basically, you know, we found that was helpful. And we've lived in Seattle, in the Seattle area, for many years. And we'd go to the Seattle dispensaries. They have medical dispensaries, like 200 of them plus around Seattle.
And the way it works up here is that you have permission from a medical professional, don't you, to have access to those products, right?
Yeah, you have to go to a doctor. They have to evaluate your medical conditions and then give you a prescription to go. And so you're following. That's how the state law works. It's called RCW 69.51A, and you can look it up online, and it explains the whole thing. And so then my mom and my stepdad are retired in eastern Washington over in Kettle Falls. It's northeast Washington, about a six-hour drive from Seattle. And they also, you know, they're an older couple. They have arthritis, and he's got bad knees. My mom has disc degenerative disease. They've got a lot of health issues. And so they they also are used to getting prescribed lots of different types of pills. And they definitely never were into marijuana as, you know, smoking it or anything like that. But I said, hey, you should just give it a try. You can cook with this oil, maybe see if, you know, eat some of it so Larry could sleep through the night. And they did, and they found a lot of help. So they went to the medical dispensaries in Spokane, because there's like, I don't know, 30 or 40 medical dispensaries in Spokane. But what happened is it's kind of costly. If you're going to make the oils, you have to buy quite a bit of the actual cannabis flower to make oils and cook with it, or juice it. So it's really expensive at the dispensaries. But in Washington state law, they allow you to either use medical marijuana and buy it from a dispensary, or you can grow your own in what's called a medical collective. And so since my wife and I, we don't really have the time or really the space living in the city to actually grow our own marijuana, my mom and my stepdad, they have 30 acres in eastern Washington where they, you know, my mom has a garden, a big garden every year, vegetables and tomatoes and stuff, and so that she's used to gardening. So what we decided to do was to pool our resources together and to pool our, whatever we call our scripts, our medical marijuana scripts, and put them on the property so then we could grow our own medicine. And so that's what we decided to do, because the Washington state law allows you to grow your medicine. So we
it allows you to grow a certain number of plants per prescribed individual, right?
Yeah, 15 plants per person.
Okay.
Yeah. So we had five people, which would allow us 75 plants. They did.
Who was the fifth? There was you, your wife, your mom, and
my
your
mom, stepdad, and a friend of ours, close friend of ours. Yeah.
Okay.
And so we had five people, and those, you know, we allowed 75 plants, but actually in the law, it actually only allows you 45 plants. But then there's also a caveat. If you have a reason to have more than 45, if you can prove you have a reason, you're allowed more than 45
plants. Okay, so hold on. So the law is 15 per person, up to a maximum of 45 on a particular piece of property, right?
Well, what's interesting is they say for a collective, and you can have, there's nothing in the law that says you cannot have more than one collective of 45 plants on one tax parcel.
Oh.
So that's kind of how the dispensaries in Seattle are able to provide marijuana to hundreds and thousands of patients, because you can have multiple collectives on one property.
Okay.
Because some local ordinances or local cities didn't want to have so many plants grown in one place.
Mm-hmm.
Some local cities have actually passed ordinances where they only allow one collective per tax parcel.
Okay.
But in Stevens County, that's not the case. So technically, we had, there was 68 plants, so we would have two collectives basically operating on one 30-acre tax parcel.
Got it.
So what happened was that was all fine and dandy. We didn't even make it to harvest until basically the state cops came in and they raided the place, and they took 23 plants.
When was this?
This was in August 9th of 2012. So
About
over two years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the state came in, they, you know, thought it was a traditional, you know, SWAT team. They, my mom was the only one home, you know, at this rural, peaceful, you know, homestead. And the cops came in with their guns and were like treating her like a drug cartel. But then she laid out the scripts or prescriptions. Mm-hmm. Just like the law says, if an officer asks, you have to show them your prescriptions to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of backed off and were like, oh, okay. So they ended up taking 23 plants and left 45 plants in the ground because the local state prosecutor would not prosecute the case. They didn't arrest anybody, and then they actually left.
Okay. So this, we're just setting the story up here. We're going into the first break. This is Roland Gregg telling us the story of he and his family against the state, and we will be back in a few minutes. Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio. I'm going to hand this straight back to my guest, Roland Gregg, to continue telling us his story. Roland.
Yeah, thanks, Robin. So we were just picking up where the local state officers, they'd come in and they'd raided my mom's house in eastern Washington. And they basically thought they were going to have some illegal drug operation there. And the reason they found out about it, because they flew over. They flew over previously. Actually, the United States Forest Service flew over. And it's interesting because in the report that we got from the United States Forest Service, it said that they spotted what they called a potential medical marijuana outdoor garden. Mm. And they said medical because we made sure to put a big 4x8 foot sign with a big green cross out right next to the garden, so anybody flying over would realize that okay. What the purpose of it was. It was outdoors, completely in the open. Anybody flying over could see it, so it's not like anybody was trying to hide anything because we didn't think we had to hide anything. We thought we were following state law. Why would we have to hide anything?
Right. Now, by the way, you said when they did the first raid, they took 23 plants to leave you with the 45. So did they refuse to accept that you had two collectives?
Yes, they did.
Okay.
Yes. The state, there's quite a bit of internal fighting with the the police, the state, and the people and what they want to actually happen. The sheriffs are really used to the forfeiture and seizure laws, which allows them to basically raid places, take property, and never even charge people, but they get to keep your property. And that's what funds this massive drug war, is this forfeiture. They take billions of dollars from people without even charging them because they make your property as a person and they charge the actual property, and the property can't defend itself. And the forfeiture laws are set up so they can take that and keep funding their drug war.
So here's the first outrage. I mean, the fact, you know, so much for due process, right? So much for the Constitution, so much for the Bill of Rights. Yep. You are not protected in your property, and you know, the idea of due process is just a quaint old historical yep. anachronism, it seems. Okay, Roland, yeah, carry on.
That's correct. And so they actually, another reason that this for the extra plants was that it's an outdoor garden, you know, harvested once a year. People in the medical dispensaries in Seattle, they harvest indoors every 2 to 3 months, and so they can get a lot more with that 15 plants. Mm. But if you have an outdoor organic garden, then you lose – you plant 70 plants, you're going to lose 2, 3, 4 plants because of the wind or, you know, the rain or whatever. It's just going to be harder to keep them alive. So anyways, that's so what happened was they left. They didn't arrest anybody, and we're kind of like, huh. So they also confiscated my stepdad's four-wheeler. They took the four-wheeler, and they took all of my stepdad's hunting rifles. So they
did they tell you why?
No, they did not tell us why.
Okay.
We asked them, are you going to arrest anybody? Did we break any laws? And they said, no, you didn't. but we're still confiscating these guns and your four-wheeler in case we charge you. And so it was not clear. It was like, okay, so we didn't break any laws, but they're still taking the guns and the four-wheeler. It didn't make any sense. They also took $700 in cash from my mom that she had sitting in her sock drawer just for savings. And they didn't give a reason for that either.
Sorry, they went through her sock drawer?
They searched the entire house. They turned it upside down.
With a warrant?
Yeah, they had a warrant.
They had a warrant to search your house because of the plants, but you weren't breaking any law. Okay. Yeah. Keep going.
That's correct. Yeah, you're starting to see it right now. And so then they left, and we were kind of like, what the heck? So we didn't really know what to do. At that point, it was kind of, you know, because my mom and stepdad, they do hunt every year for turkey and for deer, and they live off the land, so it's kind of something they do. And so not having his guns also for protection, because they live out there with bears and moose and mountain lions and stuff, and so they have, you know, animals, cats and dogs that they need to protect. So it was just like, why the heck would they take the guns when there was no danger and there was no laws broken and they were legal guns, hunting stuff. So anyways, we were just kind of like, what are we going to do? And then 7 days later, the federal government came in with their own warrant, the DEA, and they took the rest of the 45 plants out of the ground. They confiscated my mom's 2006 Saturn SUV. They took both my mom and my stepdad's they've got like Suzuki, like road bikes, motorcycles, and they took my mom's computer, and there was some processed medical cannabis that they used to cook with, that they cook as well. And so they basically took a bunch more property, and they didn't arrest anybody. They didn't arrest my mom. My mom was the only one there again. I was actually on a business trip in Alaska presenting. Oddly enough, it was the same time I was actually presenting I'm actually part Tlingit, a part of the Yakutat Tlingit tribe, and so is my mom in Yakutat, Alaska. And so I was presenting some renewable technology solutions to my tribe when this was all happening.
I gotta say, I'm like sitting here, I'm getting worked up because I want to tell those people who are doing this to you that there's something wrong with them. That they have this kind of mentality that seems to me to be on the spectrum of those people at the Nuremberg trials who said, I was just following orders. I just don't believe that at this point, you don't know if you're one of these DEA officers, that what you are making a living out of is the destruction of people's lives. Because I do want to make the point that you guys, nobody in your family had any kind of criminal record, right?
Correct.
There's no a priori reason here at all, or prima facie reason at all, to think that you're engaged in something. Obviously, you're not engaged in anything illicit. Obviously, you're not engaged in something violent. And you had these prescriptions that the government had seen, the government agents had seen. I mean, this is a kind of sickness that I think you're up against. And this sick, malicious statism works because there are sick people who can compromise their integrity so much, so easily, that they're quite happy to take money for doing this to people like you. And if any of you DEA officers are listening to this, and I'm sure you're not, well, you know what? I would really like you to come on this show and tell me how you live with yourselves, how you go to bed at night. Anyway, you carry on. I'm sorry. I'm just getting so worked up because I'm just imagining this happening to my family and just the sheer damn injustice of it. You carry on. I'm sorry to preempt, but
I agree, Robin. It's a little bit like Dorothy going down the rabbit hole.
It's a cross. You know what? That's it. It's a bit. You're right. It's a cross between Dorothy going down the hole and bloody Kafka. Kafka's The Trial. This is. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Anyway, okay, carry on, because you still got a lot of this story to tell.
Yeah, so that was really all, 2 years ago. It was in August of 2012. And then, these months after months, nobody gets arrested. We don't have any word from the federal government or the state government what's going to happen. They just took this property and they left. And we're like thinking, are we going to sue them? How are we going to get the property back? Now, I mean, can we grow more medicine? Can we go buy it? What's going to happen? So we were really in this twilight zone for about 6 months.
I mean, that fact alone, that they couldn't even give you that information. They couldn't even tell you your parameters for how to proceed. I mean, no. You know, you don't need a lot of empathy if you're one of these agents to know how awful it would be to be on the receiving end of that. You know, and you're supposed to live with that. Nobody gives a flying damn. They're not really doing this for the good of people, because if they did, they would treat you differently. I mean, even if they had to do what they did, which obviously I would dispute, but even if they had to under some rules, they wouldn't treat you like this. But anyway, carry on.
No, they definitely did not treat us like humans, especially not humans with apparent constitutional rights, which was innocent until proven guilty, which is not the case here. So the 6 months go by, February 2nd, 2013.
Okay, you know what? Because of my rants, we're already coming up to the second break.
Okay.
So hold on to that date. We'll go into this break. We've got some news at the bottom of the hour, and we'll be back shortly.
Sounds good.
You're listening to Blue Republican Radio, and my guest, Roland Gregg, is about to tell us what happened to him on February the 2nd, 2013.
All right. Yes. That was the date that everything got really real. I was in Alaska also. I work in Alaska a lot. My company that I do for a living, we develop clean energy technologies, and so we work in communities to help them find affordable and sustainable energy, food, water, healing, shelter, and waste solutions. So that's what I do for a living. And so I was up in Alaska with my mom, actually, again, presenting in front of my tribe in Yakutat, Alaska, when I got a call from my my wife's mother that said that said that my wife was in jail.
Okay.
Excuse me. Basically, they had raided my house. The DA had come into my house when I was gone and taken my wife to jail. And I got a call from my wife's mom that happened. And I was like, oh my gosh, what's going on? So apparently they had, the SWAT team had come to my house in Kirkland, and they arrested my wife. And at the same time they did that, they
did they specify charges at this point, Roland? Did they tell you why she was arrested?
They did have charges at that time. They presented her with, I think it was 6 charges, and the charges were conspiracy to manufacture over 100 marijuana plants. It was intent or conspiracy to manufacture an intent to distribute over 100 plants. I was maintaining a drug-involved premise, using guns in furtherance of a drug crime.
So the point here, okay, I mean, that's enough to get the point. So the point is, this is legislation being used as a weapon.
Yeah.
Right? Now, just explain where they got over 100, how they did that. Because
they found...
Go ahead.
They found pictures of a garden of some of the cannabis plants that were dated the previous year. So they, because 100 is a threshold of a 5-year mandatory minimum prison sentence, and they use these big, big charges to scare you into taking a plea deal of guilty. Right. And so they basically combined the previous year, of which they had no evidence other than a picture they found in the office.
Right.
And the plants that they had, that's how they got over 100, because they didn't find over 100 that when they were there.
So let's be clear what's going on at this point. At this point, the government is knowingly being knowingly deceitful, right? I mean, this is it's manufacturing evidence in the sense of the evidence doesn't show what they're about to claim it shows, right?
Correct.
And
correct.
And they're doing, and this doesn't serve any purpose at all, right? Except, I guess, enables them to say, hey, look, you know, they want the statistic, I don't know. But what they've managed to do now is ruin lives for no purpose using what I would call false evidence.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, so
correct.
Far, that's where we're at. Okay, you carry on, Warren. And I am sorry, and I am very sorry for what happened to you and your family. Carry on.
Thank you. So at the same time, they did a raid at my mom's house and arrested my stepdad, Larry. And so they took
How old
both
is Larry?
Larry.
How old is Larry?
Yeah, he's 70 years old.
Okay.
He has a hard time walking. He's not dangerous to anybody at all. He's a retired commercial fisherman and commercial trucker.
Okay.
And so he was arrested. My wife was arrested. And he was arrested and taken to Spokane County Jail, and Michelle was taken into custody in Seattle. And Michelle spent the night there and was released the next day. And Larry, because things are quite different politically and locally between Seattle and Spokane, he spent 17 days in jail. And he was not given any of his medicine. He was denied all of his medicine, his heart medicine, his gout medicine. He actually ended up walking into prison, and he had to be taken out in a wheelchair, and he has permanent damage to his feet because the gout was so bad it deformed his feet because they didn't have his medicine to take care of it. So they were really nasty to him in jail. And the thing is, they knew where we all lived. We already had lawyers that contacted them and said, hey, if you want us to come in and talk to you, let us know. We'll come into court for any appearance. We have no idea what you're doing. But instead, they issued warrants, went and raided both my house and my mom's house, and took my wife and Larry into jail when they didn't need to, and just to prove some point and to scare us. And so then my friend, the fifth person in the indictment, and my mom and myself were all out of town. So we immediately called our lawyers and said, hey, can you call them and let them know that we're out of town? We know that there's a warrant out for us so we can just come in peacefully. And we got word that that would be allowed, but right when I got back to my house, the SWAT team was waiting for me. I flew back 2 days later to Seattle, got to my house. They arrested me, took me into custody, and I spent 3 days in federal prison before I was released on an appearance bond. We were all released on appearance bonds, meaning there's conditions of our release. And so we, you know, pleaded not guilty. And, you know, then the last 2 years we've been fighting this. They've offered us many plea deals. We're not taking it because we do not believe that we've violated. I mean, we were number one, told by our doctors to do this. Number two, the state law said that we could do this. And so we don't believe that we should plead guilty to a federal crime that we didn't commit, especially since there are thousands and thousands, millions across the nations of people doing this. You know, why are they focusing on us? And we don't really know. And there's a lot more minutia to the story the last 2 years of what has happened with the court case because we've fought this. It gets really weird. So
good for you. So it really is like Kafka's The Trial. It gets weird. Okay. Now, look, Roland, so this is the broad sweep of your story right now.
Yes.
So we have about 10, 12, 13, something like that minutes. So let's talk about what this really means. Like what are the lessons that when we spoke on the phone, Roland, you and I, you know, you started to reel off some of the amendments of the Bill of Rights that all of this just sickeningly abuses, violates. Yeah. What are your thoughts here? I mean, tell us, how do you feel most, let's say, abused in terms of as an American citizen with rights?
Well, if our Constitution actually is in operation, which I have my doubts, and now because of my own experience, I'm really having my doubts that it actually operates functionally today to limit the powers of the state. Through my experience, you know, I didn't have $50,000 to $100,000 to hire a lawyer. So I had to go ahead and write all of the motions myself. They appointed me a public defender, which was worthless, completely worthless. So I ended up doing a lot of research into the constitutional ramifications of this case, and I started to see constitutional after constitutional after constitutional violation. Number one was violation of due process, and that's the Fifth Amendment. Basically, The arbitrary and capricious scheduling of marijuana as a class one in the CSA.
Oh, by the way, Ron, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but some time ago, not long ago, I did an interview with Ben Swan. And Ben Swan has, and I interviewed him specifically about some investigative journalism he did, showing that the CDC, the United States government, holds two patents on two of the on components of marijuana for medical purposes, while scheduling it as class one, which specifies that it has no medical benefit. So the government is actually lying to itself and all of us. And by the way, if you're interested in this story that, you know, now on this show with, that you're hearing from Roland, do go back through the BlueRepublican.org podcast archives and find that interview with Ben Swan, because it will make you even more sickened by what you're hearing today from Roland. Sorry, Roland, you carry on, mate.
That's perfect. That's patent number 6,630,507.
I love it. You know that. Of course you do. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. And it's actually owned by the United States Department of Health and Human Services. Thank in 2003, you. October 3rd is when they patented that particular one. It's cannabis as a neuroprotectant and antioxidant. It's definitely an Orwellian world we're living in, from my point of view.
Absolutely.
So basically, the Fifth Amendment violated the Tenth Amendment. Those powers which were not explicitly granted to the federal government are reserved to the states or the people. This is not the case right here.
And just to be clear, the sheriff came in that first raid. They didn't prosecute. It's the feds in trampling over the tenth. You know. Basically, the Tenth Amendment to come and try and destroy a family, your family.
That's correct.
Okay, you carry
that's
on.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it's called it's the anti-commandeering clause, which they broke. They commandeered local state actors and violated state law. And even in the CSA, which is the Controlled Substance Act of 1970, it states that the federal government does not choose to actually occupy the field. There's specific ways that the federal government chooses to enforce its what it's called the supremacy clause, and it even doesn't say, you know, we do not choose to occupy the field, yet they absolutely are occupying the field and having absolute power in that. So that's the Tenth Amendment, and I wrote a long motion on that, denied, you know, all of these denied by the judge, carte blanche. Another one,
really,
which is,
because I guess if they actually didn't deny it, this would delegitimize, I mean, basically what the feds do every day of the week, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so carry on. Yep.
The other one, which is probably the most blatant and obvious and really hard to explain, is the 14th Amendment, the violation of the Equal Protections Clause. That Equal Protections Clause basically states that the state cannot arbitrarily choose who it does and does not prosecute. It can't apply the federal law unevenly, and they would have to, you know, get a 5 million man army to employ the law against medical marijuana patients in 33 states, and now four different states that have recreationally done it, including Washington, D.C., where the federal government sits, and it's 10 square miles. And so that's the biggest one that we feel on appeal. If we don't win at trial, which we do feel we will, right now our trial is scheduled for December 1st.
Now, hold on a second, Ron. Let me ask you about that. So, I mean, obviously I find your arguments here convincing, but that's kind of my whole shtick as a liberty fighter in the United States. But if these are being denied, why do you feel you're going to win? I mean, because your strongest constitutional bases are being denied. So explain why you're confident.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's a good point. So the way that the federal government has won 99% of all cases that they bring is because they scare people into taking plea deals. That means, well, if you plead to this lesser crime and take a few years in jail, get a felony drug, you know, we'll go ahead and drop these other charges and you'll just, you know, go to jail for a few years and, you know, have a nice life.
And again, for my listeners, you're not just using that number 99% hyperbolically. The actual number is close to 99%, isn't it? It's like within
Right.
And so, you know, this again, the state uses the law as weapon. So this is the difference between legislation, right, and natural law. And you know, and there's a conversation here about jury nullification to have, I suppose. But back over to you, Roland. Why are you optimistic?
Well, the victimless crimes, people are starting to realize, are really a tool of oppression that the corporation uses the government as a tool to enforce their monopolies. And that's just a little bit more minutia than you probably want to get into right now. But the getting back to why we think we're going to win is we have all said no to the plea deals the last 2 years. They've offered us plea deals. We've said no. We're not going to stay guilty to something we didn't do. They've also denied us the right to actually bring in the evidence that we are medical marijuana patients following state law. They've actually excluded that evidence. The judge said that it's irrelevant. The law, the state law, is irrelevant, and that we cannot bring it in. So oddly enough, we can't even talk about that. Interestingly enough, there we do feel that the truth will come.
So I was just going to say, of course, because if you had your 10th Amendment protection, you could talk about that. But, you know, of course, we don't have this. Our courts here are constitution-free zone. So, you know, it's abuse compounded with abuse. But, yeah, carry on. Yeah.
Yeah. So we feel that the truth will come out during trial.
How? If you're not allowed to bring that evidence, how?
Well, we feel that if people have to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help me God, and there will be many witnesses there, that the truth will have to come out. It may not come out through, the lawyers that have been limited by the court's ruling, but we feel that it will come out naturally through the progression of cross-examination of officers, of why they left 45 plants, of, you know, certain things. We just feel that the truth can't be kept out of it. And we also, you know, we've got hundreds of people that have already committed to showing up at the trial to protest and do all these things.
Oh, you just took a thought out of my head, because I was just about to ask you, where's the courthouse? Where does this judge live? Because anybody listening to me, we'll tell them on this show where to protest and when.
Absolutely. It's the judge who's, interestingly enough, we've actually just had judges been switched on us. One of the judges was taken off the case. We're not sure if it's because he's been emotionally involved and was becoming very biased in his decisions, or if he had a health problem. But there's a new judge, Thomas Rice, in Spokane, Washington. It's at the Spokane Federal Courthouse in Spokane, Washington.
Okay.
And on December 1st, but it's probably going to be continued just to be transparent. It may be continued a week or two. It may be continued into the better part of next year, January, February, or March. It just depends on when the judge feels like there's, granting or denying the motion for continuance. It was based on the fact that the previous judge did schedule the trial on a date when one of our co-defendants, his counsel could not be there. And so and he purposefully knew that. There's been a lot of stuff like that where the judge has made rulings very, very much favoring the prosecution in many different circumstances.
Yeah.
And I'm in the process of writing out every single detail on a day by day, week by week timeline, and it'll be up on the kettlefalls5.com for you guys to take a look at.
Hold on a second. We're going into the last break here. Kettlefalls5.com is where you can find more information. We will be back after this break.
Sounds good.
Welcome to the end of Blue Republican Radio for this week. I just want to hand this back in the last 2.5 minutes to Roland Gregg so he can share with all of us, any other really important pieces of information he wants to get out before this show is done.
Thanks, Robin. You guys can definitely check out the updates on our trial at the Kettle Falls 5 Facebook page. There's a lot of information there. You can go to kettlefalls5.com and take a look at the media page, and you'll see that we've been on CNN, Forbes, New York Times, LA Times, USA Today, The Guardian, Al Jazeera TV, a bunch of local stations. So we're getting positive coverage because the shift of consciousness in the entire nation is to a liberty mindset, to have civil rights that are appreciated. We're starting to learn that the prohibition of anything is a violation of your civil rights, and that this should be vehemently opposed to allow the state to reach and peer into your life. So this is just an example that we would like to stand strong and set, and we're not going to give up on this. We're going to go to trial. We hope that the fourth branch of government, our jury, will be able to see yes. through the smokescreen, and will be able to make the right decision, because they do have the right to judge the law and the facts, not just the facts. The jury is the last bit of protection from the state, from overzealous laws against ourselves. And so we do believe that will happen, that justice will prevail with our jury, our fellow citizens, just like in the ending of the alcohol prohibition, neighbors stopped convicting their neighbors for doing something that they knew was not hurting anybody. And so we think the same thing with marijuana prohibition should end. In fact, you know, I personally believe that all drugs should be legal, but that's my stance. I think that it's your choice. If you want to put something in your mouth, it's up to you. If you don't hurt me, that's your business. It's a victimless crime. And so, but at least marijuana, as not being as harmful as alcohol or cigarettes, shouldn't be treated the way it is. And so obviously the people of Washington State believe that for recreational medical purposes. And that should be, you know, this is the states are, you know, they're experiments. They're local experiments in how to live. And so thank you, Robin, for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This is a story of one family standing up on principle. And, you know, it doesn't take many people to stand up on principle to, you know, sometimes be the trigger to change the system. Please support Ron and Greg in his fight, in his family's fight. Thank you for being with me on Blue Republican Radio.